Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're digging into something pretty fascinating. How does one company manage to, well, navigate the incredible complexity of the U.S. healthcare system? And not just navigate it, but actually become the biggest, most diversified player out there, covering everything from insurance right through to actually delivering care?
Yeah, it's quite a story.
We are talking about United Health Group, UNH. It's really an extraordinary setup, almost like two huge businesses working together perfectly. You've got the massive United Healthcare Insurance side.
Right.
And then there's the fast-growing Optum Health Services platform.
And colossus is definitely the right word. I mean, we really mean it when we say that. This isn't just another insurer. It's a true healthcare giant, one that's integrated itself across the whole value chain in a way that, honestly, very few others have even come close to managing. And that integration, that's really key to understanding their power.
Okay, so for you, our listener, here's the mission for this deep dive. We want to cut through all the jargon, all the complexity, and help you really grasp the core of UNH's power.
Exactly.
What makes their business model unique, where they might be heading, and importantly, the big challenges they're facing.
Yeah, those are critical.
By the end of this, you should walk away with those essential nuggets of knowledge, enough to be genuinely well-informed about this healthcare powerhouse.
And to do that, this deep dive, it's built on a pretty comprehensive fundamental analysis.
Yeah.
We've really synthesized insights from multiple reports, lots of financial data.
Right.
And that analysis gives us a detailed framework for, you know, thinking about UNH's intrinsic value. The conclusion, broadly, it's a resilient, high-quality company. It has a compelling long-term growth story.
But,
and it's a big but, it's constantly balanced by this complex, ever-present cloud of regulatory challenges. It really is a fascinating study in how to operate in such a dynamic and, frankly, high-stakes market.
All right, then. Let's unpack that core idea. So at the very heart of what makes United Health Group unique, there's this central concept. It's incredibly powerful and crucially self-reinforcing business model. It's really not just an insurance company, and it's not just a healthcare provider. It's both. And these two sides are deeply woven together. That seems to be where the magic happens, creating this powerful competitive edge.
That's precisely it. That integration, that's what creates what you could call a truly durable competitive moat for UNH.
A moat, like protecting a castle.
Exactly. Think of it that way. By combining United Healthcare, their massive insurance arm, with Optum, their health services platform, they're not just, you know, playing in the healthcare ecosystem. They're actively capturing value all across it.
Okay.
And this effectively transforms them. They go from being, say, a traditional insurer who mostly just takes the prices set by hospitals and doctors.
A price taker.
Right. A price taker.
Uh-huh.
Into a much more influential price maker.
Mm-hmm.
And a true manager of care. That distinction, it's absolutely critical for you to grasp. It's really fundamental to their strength and, frankly, how they make money.
Okay, so a business model like that, letting them play on both sides of the street, so to speak. What are the big long-term trends in healthcare that UNH is just perfectly set up to ride, those secular tailwinds you hear about?
Yeah, there are two really major long-term trends, these secular tailwinds, that UNH is exceptionally well-positioned for. The first one, it's undeniable. The aging of the U.S. population.
Right, the demographics.
Exactly. And here's the powerful insight for you. This isn't just a demographic shift. It's a predictable, almost guaranteed demand driver for United Health, especially in Medicare Advantage.
Ah, okay.
Think about this. People over 55, they make up less than a third of the population, right?
Mm.
But they account for over half of all health spending. And if you zero in on those over 85, their per capita spending is more than eight times that of children. This just fuels this immense growing demand for Medicare Advantage products. And guess who's the market leader there?
UNH.
Right. It's a massive concentrated market.
Yeah.
And they're dominating it.
Okay, that's a big one. What's the second tailwind?
The second major tailwind is the systemic shift from what we call fee-for-service healthcare.
Paying for volume.
Exactly. Paying for volume, the more tests, the more procedures, the more you get paid. The shift is towards value-based care.
Which focuses on outcomes.
Precisely. It shifts the focus to outcomes, to quality. It's about paying for keeping people healthy, not just treating them when they're sick.
Mm.
And this plays directly into Optum's strengths.
How so?
Because Optum's platform is basically designed for this.
Mm.
Managing population health, leveraging huge amounts of data analytics, delivering care more efficiently. It aligns the incentives for better patient outcomes and cost management. It's a fundamental shift in how healthcare is paid for and delivered, and UNH is really at the forefront.
That sounds like a really powerful flywheel effect then, where each part just feeds the other in a continuous loop.
It absolutely is a powerful flywheel. It's almost a masterclass in how integration can create something far more potent than just the sum of its parts.
Okay, break that down for us. How does it actually work?
Okay, so here's how it works. UnitedHealthcare, right, with its enormous membership base,
yeah,
it provides this massive and, importantly, proprietary data stream.
Okay, data from all those members.
Exactly. A continuous flow of real-world claims data, clinical data, plus you have a captive population of members who need care.
Mm-hmm.
This incredibly valuable data and this population, they get fed directly into Optum.
Right, into the services side.
Into the services side. Then Optum's sophisticated capabilities kick in. You've got direct care delivery through Optum Health, pharmacy benefit management, the PBM, through Optum Rx, and advanced tech and analytics via Optum Insight.
Mm-hmm.
All these capabilities enable UnitedHealthcare to do something really special. They can better manage medical costs. They can price their insurance products much more competitively than rivals. And they can design innovative benefits that, guess what? Attract even more members.
Ah, closing the loop.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So as UnitedHealthcare grows, Optum gets more data, more opportunities. And as Optum gets smarter, more efficient, it makes UnitedHealthcare even more competitive, attracting more members. It's this self-reinforcing loop that just keeps getting stronger over time.
Okay, so that's the strength, the integrated model, the flywheel driving growth. But look, it can't all be smooth sailing. There have got to be significant challenges, right? Especially for a company this huge in a sector like healthcare. What's that persistent cloud of risk look like?
You're absolutely right to ask about the risks.
Mm-hmm.
Because despite these incredible strengths, UNH operates under this constant cloud of regulatory and political risk.
Mm.
Its sheer size, its market dominance, particularly in Medicare Advantage, which, remember, covers over half of all eligible seniors. Now it just makes it an inevitable target. Intense scrutiny from policymakers, antitrust authorities. It's constant.
What kinds of things are they scrutinizing?
Well, there are these persistent debates around, you know, the escalating costs of healthcare generally, specific reimbursement rates for Medicare, the controversial practices of pharmacy benefit managers, the PBMs, and the broader competitive worries about vertical integration combining insurance, PBMs, and care delivery. These aren't minor issues. They represent real headwinds that could impact their entire business model.
And wasn't there a big recent example of another kind of risk?
Yes. And this is a crucial detail for you, the listener, to remember. The 2024 cyber attack on its Change Healthcare subsidiary.
Right. That was huge news.
It was massive. And it was a stark, real-world example of the significant operational and reputational risks that come with UNH's increasingly tech-centric strategy. It caused widespread disruption across the entire U.S. healthcare system. It impacted countless providers, patients.
Yeah, I remember doctors' offices couldn't get paid.
Exactly. And it resulted in billions of dollars in direct costs for UNH. That kind of event, it definitely tempers the investment outlook. It contributes to periods where the share price gets volatile, even though historically the company commands a premium valuation.
A premium that's generally seen as justified.
Generally justified by its superior growth and quality, yes.
Mm.
But it's very sensitive to how the market perceives these regulatory and operational risks in any given time. Hashtag take two, navigating the evolving U.S. healthcare landscape.
Okay, let's zoom out a bit then and just set the stage. The broader U.S. healthcare landscape, it's truly enormous, isn't it? We're talking, what, over 17% of the nation's entire economy, the GDP.
Mm-hmm.
And it's remarkably non-cyclical. People need healthcare whether the economy is booming or busting.
It's an immense market, absolutely. The size is almost hard to wrap your head around. Various estimates put the U.S. health insurance market value well over, say, $1.5
trillion. Trillion, wow.
Yeah. And some analyses even predict the individual market alone could hit over $2.5 trillion by 2030. That suggests a steady growth rate, maybe 6, 7% year after year through the end of the decade.
So consistent growth.
Consistent growth, largely independent of economic cycles. And that makes it a highly attractive sector for big players like UNH.
So in such a massive growing sector, what are the fundamental forces really driving this consistent, almost relentless growth? What's pushing it forward year after year?
Well, there are several really deeply entrenched drivers. First, you've got the rising prevalence of chronic diseases, things like diabetes, cancer, heart conditions.
Things that need long-term care.
Exactly. They require ongoing medical management, often for years, sometimes decades. That significantly boosts the overall demand for healthcare services. For instance, diabetes cases in the U.S., they're projected to grow substantially over the next few years. Each case needs complex, long-term care.
Okay. Chronic diseases. What else?
Second, the escalating cost of medical services themselves. Hospital stays, specialty drugs, they just keep getting more expensive. And that makes health insurance an increasingly essential financial protection tool for individuals, for families. It consistently drives demand for coverage.
Right. People need insurance to afford the care.
Precisely. And finally, maybe the most powerful and predictable driver is that demographic tailwind we touched on. The aging of the U.S. population.
Back to the seniors.
Healthcare spending is heavily skewed toward older age groups. Adults 65 and older, they're a much smaller percentage of the population, but they account for a hugely disproportionate share of personal healthcare spending. So, as the baby boomer generation continues to age into these highest spending years, this demographic shift essentially guarantees a powerful long-term demand surge for healthcare services, especially for Medicare programs.
That makes perfect sense. So it sounds like government programs, Medicare, Medicaid, that's where a lot of this growth is really concentrated. You mentioned a barbell effect.
Exactly. It's like a barbell.
Yeah.
The strongest growth is happening at the ends of the economic and age spectrum. Seniors through Medicare, low-income populations through Medicaid.
So while the commercial insurance market, the employer-sponsored plans, that's still the biggest piece by enrollment.
It is, yes. But the most significant growth drivers for managed care organizations like UNH, they are firmly concentrated in those government-sponsored programs. The traditional employer segment, though large, has pretty much stagnated in terms of growth.
Okay, let's focus on Medicare Advantage then. You called it the single most important growth driver.
It really is. The single most important growth driver in the entire industry is this secular shift away from traditional government-run fee-for-service Medicare.
Where the government just pays the bills.
Right. Towards these privately managed Medicare Advantage plans. And this shift, it's monumental. In 2024, we hit a historic milestone. For the first time, more than half, over 50% of all eligible Medicare beneficiaries were enrolled in an MA plan.
Wow, over half. That's huge compared to, say, 15 years ago.
Absolutely. It was less than 20% back in 2007. And this trend, it shows absolutely no signs of slowing down. Projections suggest MA penetration could reach nearly two-thirds, maybe 64% by 2034.
Why is it so popular with seniors? What's the appeal?
Well, for seniors, the value proposition is incredibly compelling. Unlike traditional Medicare, MA plans have to include an annual out-of-pocket spending limit. That provides crucial financial protection against catastrophic costs.
That's a big deal.
It is. Plus, the private insurers, they leverage their efficiencies and the government payments they receive to offer things like zero premium plans and a whole host of supplemental benefits that traditional Medicare just doesn't cover: dental, vision, hearing services. These are highly attractive to beneficiaries.
But you mentioned headwinds earlier. It's not all rosy.
No, not entirely. The MA market is definitely facing some near-term headwinds right now. Payers are grappling with changes in how MA plans get paid specifically. Changes to the risk adjustment model called V28.
Risk adjustment, meaning how they get paid more for sicker patients.
Exactly. Changes there can impact revenue. There's also been a noticeable rise in medical utilization, people using more healthcare services post-pandemic. And then you have the impacts of recent legislation, like the Inflation Reduction Act, on prescription drug costs.
So all that puts pressure on margins.
Correct. All these factors together are putting pressure on MA margins. It's forcing insurers to really optimize their plan designs and focus heavily on operational efficiency. So for you, the listener, definitely be aware of these complexities. They can affect even the biggest players like UNH.
Okay, MA is huge. What about the Medicaid side? Has that seen a similar transformation moving from direct government management to private managed care?
It absolutely has. The Medicaid market has gone through a very similar shift. States are increasingly contracting with private managed care organizations, or MCOs, to administer benefits for their low-income populations.
Why are states doing that?
Well, it offers states budget predictability, and it allows them to leverage the care management expertise of these MCOs like UNH. As of a couple of years ago, roughly three-quarters of all Medicaid beneficiaries were enrolled in some kind of comprehensive managed care program.
And is that market concentrated too?
Very much so. It's highly consolidated. United Health Group is one of just five big national for-profit firms, Centene, Elevance, UNH, Molina, CVS, Aetna, that collectively account for over half of all Medicaid MCO enrollment nationwide.
So scale matters there too?
Scale provides significant advantages in bidding for those state contracts. which is how you enter and expand in Medicaid. Currently, though, the Medicaid segment is navigating some disruption.
What's that about?
It's the unwinding of the COVID-19 public health emergency rules. During COVID, states couldn't disenroll people from Medicaid. Now they're redetermining eligibility, and millions are losing coverage.
Ah, so that creates uncertainty for the MCOs.
Exactly. Uncertainty around membership levels, and sometimes a mismatch between the payment rates and the potentially higher medical needs of the people who remain enrolled. That also puts pressure on MCO margins in the near term.
Okay, that brings us to the commercial market. What about employer-sponsored insurance, the ESI market? Still a massive part of the system, right? How's that looking?
It is indeed the bedrock. Covers well over 160 million people under 65. But it's a mature market. Largely stagnant. Enrollment has been relatively flat for several years now.
And the defining feature there is cost.
Relentless cost increases. That's the defining characteristic. Annual family premiums for employer plans. They've surged dramatically. Over the last decade, up nearly 50% to almost $24,000 a year.
$24,000 for a family plan. Wow.
Yeah. And that massive increase has forced employers to shift more of the cost burden onto employees. Higher deductibles, other cost sharing. The average individual deductible was nearing $2,000 back in 2022.
Ouch. So that pressure is driving interest in alternatives.
It is. Things like ICHRAs, individual coverage, health reimbursement arrangements. Basically, employers give employees a fixed amount of money to go buy their own plan on the individual market.
Interesting. So the bottom line for insurers in the commercial space.
The flat growth and the margin pressure in ESI have led major insurers, including UNH, to increasingly focus their strategic efforts and their capital on those higher growth government programs we just talked about, Medicare and Medicaid.
You mentioned before that healthcare is so highly regulated, so politically charged. It feels like a double-edged sword. Creates risks, but maybe some hidden advantages. How does that tension play out for UNH?
It's absolutely a double-edged sword, that regulatory complexity. Yes, it creates significant headline risk, constant scrutiny, but it also acts as a really formidable barrier to entry.
How so?
Well, the immense fixed costs, compliance, technology, navigating this patchwork of state-by-state rules. It disproportionately burdens smaller competitors. It makes it hard for new players to jump in. And that ultimately fosters industry consolidation, benefiting the big, sophisticated incumbents like UNH.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Take the medical loss ratio, or MLR rule, from the Affordable Care Act. It requires insurers to spend at least 80-85% of premium revenue on medical claims and quality improvement.
Right, limits their profit margin on the insurance itself.
Exactly. It effectively caps gross margins on the insurance business.
Yeah.
And that incentivizes operational efficiency and scale, which naturally benefits the larger players who can spread those fixed costs over more members.
Okay. And you mentioned intense scrutiny on Medicare Advantage payments. That sounds critical.
It is critical for you to understand.
Yeah.
Because it's a significant political risk for UNH and the whole industry. Independent analyses, like from MedPAC, the Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, have estimated that payments to MA plans are often notably higher, maybe even 20% higher, or more than what it would have cost to cover the same beneficiaries in traditional Medicare.
20% higher? How?
It's attributed largely to two things. One is coding intensity. MA plans tend to document more diagnoses for their members than traditional Medicare providers do, which leads to higher risk scores and those higher payments.
Okay.
The other is favorable selection. The idea that MA plans might, on average, attract seniors who are slightly healthier than those remaining in traditional Medicare.
So this perceived overpayment.
This perceived overpayment, which could amount to tens of billions of dollars annually across the industry, means future administrations or Congress could change the risk adjustment model or cut base payment rates. That would significantly reduce revenue for all MA plans, hitting UNH directly, given their huge MA business.
Got it. Big risk there. And what about the vertical integration itself? Combining insurance, PBMs, doctors?
That draws significant antitrust scrutiny, too. From regulators, from policymakers. There are legitimate concerns that this kind of consolidation could reduce competition, potentially raise prices for consumers, create conflicts of interest.
PBMs seem to be a particular focus.
They are. The role of pharmacy benefit managers in the drug supply chain is under intense scrutiny. There are ongoing legislative and regulatory efforts aimed specifically at increasing transparency and maybe curbing their negotiating power. These aren't just theoretical debates. They directly impact how UNH is allowed to operate and grow.
That paints a really clear picture of the landscape UNH operates in. Now, let's zero in on how they truly stand out. Just how dominant is United Health Group, really? Can you give us a sense of their market leadership in concrete terms?
Oh, they're the undisputed leader. In the U.S. managed care industry, by pretty much any measure you look at, take direct written premiums, basically their insurance revenue, UNH's is more than double its next largest competitor, Elevance Health.
Double. That's huge.
It's massive scale. And this scale is obvious across all major market segments. In that critical Medicare Advantage market we talked about, UNH holds a dominant 29% market share. That's significantly ahead of Humana at 18%, CVS Aetna at 12%, Elevance at 6%.
So almost a third of the entire MA market.
Almost a third. And their leadership is even more pronounced when you look locally. In 41% of U.S. counties, UNH had the highest MA market share in 2024. And get this, in 22% of counties, their share actually exceeded 50%.
Wow, half the market in some places.
Yeah. In Medicaid, they're a top five national player, around 9% market share, in a very consolidated space where scale and state relationships are key.
Mm-hmm.
And in the commercial market, their provider network is the largest in the nation. Over 1.7 million physicians, 7,000 hospitals. That's a key advantage for attracting big multi-state employers. These numbers aren't just isolated facts. They paint a picture of pervasive market leadership.
Okay, those figures really drive home the dominance. So what makes it so hard for others to challenge them? What are the actual sources of this sustainable advantage, this moat you mentioned?
Well, it really stems from several interconnected sources that create this powerful, self-reinforcing system. First off, just their unmatched scale and the network effects that come with it.
Okay, explain network effects here.
It creates a virtuous cycle. Their massive membership base gives them immense negotiating leverage with healthcare providers, hospitals, doctors. They can secure more favorable reimbursement rates than smaller rivals.
Cheaper prices for care.
Essentially, yes. There was a weekly consulting group study that found UNH's total cost of care was about 10% lower than the market average.
Okay.
And that cost advantage, it allows United Healthcare to offer more competitively priced premiums or better benefits, which in turn attracts more members, which further strengthens their negotiating position and makes their provider network even denser.
Ah, the cycle.
It's a classic network effect.
Yeah.
And it creates a formidable barrier to entry for anyone trying to compete on cost.
You've brought it up a few times, but it really feels like the Optum flywheel is the secret sauce here, the most potent, the most differentiating part of UNH's moat. Can you really break down systematically how that flywheel works and why it's so incredibly powerful?
Absolutely. The Optum flywheel is, I think, the best way to understand their edge. It's a masterclass in vertical integration. It's that symbiotic relationship between United Healthcare, the insurance side, and Optum, the services platform.
Mm-hmm.
And this integration, it fundamentally transforms UNH. They go from being just a passive payer of claims, someone who just processes bills after the fact, into an active manager and even a provider of care. It allows them to control a much greater portion of the healthcare value chain. It fundamentally changes their role.
Okay, walk us through the steps systematically.
Okay, step one, data inflow. UnitedHealthcare's huge base, roughly 53 million medical members, generates this constant, vast, proprietary stream of claims and clinical data.
Real-world information.
Exactly. Raw, incredibly valuable insights into what services people are using, what's working, what isn't.
Got it. Step two.
Step two. That data feeds into the analytics engine, which is Optum Insight. This part processes all that information. And Optum Insight possesses one of the most robust healthcare data sets anywhere. Hundreds of millions of lives, billions of claims records. This unparalleled data lets them build sophisticated predictive models. These models are critical. They identify high-risk patients before they get really sick and expensive. They spot gaps in care. They root out fraud and abuse. They optimize clinical pathways for efficiency and effectiveness. It's turning raw data into actionable intelligence.
Okay, intelligence generated. What's next?
Step three, care delivery through Optum Health. This is where the insights from Optum Insight get put into action. Optum Health has around 90,000 employed or affiliated physicians. They directly provide care to patients, especially within those value-based contracts where UNH actually takes on the financial risk for patient outcomes.
So they own the doctors and clinics.
They own or are tightly affiliated with a huge network. And by owning the delivery of care, UNH gains crucial influence over how care is provided. They can steer patients to the most cost-effective settings. They can proactively manage chronic conditions, not just react to claims later. It gives them direct control over utilization.
Makes sense. Is there a pharmacy piece?
Yes. Concurrently, step four is pharmacy management via OptumRx. This segment integrates prescription data with the medical data. That allows for a more holistic view of the patient.
Treating the whole person.
Exactly. It leads to better medication adherence programs, making sure people take their meds correctly. And it gives them greater leverage in negotiating drug prices with pharmaceutical companies.
Okay, data in, analyzed, care delivered, meds managed. What ties it all together?
Step 5, the powerful reinforcing feedback loop. All the clinical outcomes data, the cost data generated within this whole Optum ecosystem, it gets fed back to UnitedHealthcare.
Ah, closing the loop again.
Precisely. This allows the insurance business to price its risk more accurately, design more effective benefit plans, demonstrate superior cost control to employers and government clients, and that superior performance, it attracts more members to UnitedHealthcare.
Which feeds more data into Optum.
Making the entire system smarter, more efficient, more effective over time. It's a truly ingenious closed-loop system.
And this fundamentally changes their economics, you said.
Fundamentally. Traditional insurers are often price takers, right? Right. They negotiate rates with powerful hospital systems. But UNH, because it can internalize care delivery through Optum Health, becomes more of a price maker. They capture not just the insurance premium, but also the provider margin. And crucially, they gain direct control over medical utilization, how much care is used. That's arguably the single most powerful lever for managing total healthcare costs. It's a real game changer.
So the data advantage isn't just about having a lot of data now. It's about how it compounds. It sounds like it's always learning, always improving.
Exactly right. The data advantage created by that flywheel, it's not static. It is compounding.
Mm.
The more data UNH processes, the more accurate, the more sophisticated its algorithms become.
Oh, me too.
Leading to increasingly precise underwriting on the insurance side, more effective care management programs for members, and just a deeper, more nuanced understanding of population health trends than any competitor with smaller, less integrated data sets could possibly achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And as they keep investing heavily in AI and machine learning, which they are, deploying hundreds of AML programs for claims automation,
yeah,
clinical support, this data advantage just becomes an accelerating source of competitive differentiation.
Okay, it sounds like a formidable fortress, but even fortresses can face threats, right? What are the emerging threats to this impressive moat?
That's a crucial question, because while it's formidable, it's not entirely impervious. One threat is simply competitor emulation.
Others trying to copy the model.
Exactly. Key rivals are actively trying to replicate UNH's integrated model. Look at CVS Health buying Aetna, combining a major insurer, a leading PBM, and that huge retail footprint of pharmacies and clinics.
Right.
Or Elevance Health building out its own health services arm, Carelon. These are substantial efforts, definitely noteworthy. But frankly, they currently lag the sheer scale, the maturity, the depth of integration that UNH has achieved over more than a decade of meticulously building Optum. It's just hard to catch up to that kind of head start.
So emulation is tough. What's the bigger threat?
The more significant, more persistent threat comes from antitrust and regulatory scrutiny.
Back to the regulators.
The very success and the immense scale of UNH's integrated model make it a primary target. The Department of Justice, for instance, has launched a broad antitrust investigation. They're specifically looking at the relationships between UnitedHealthcare and Optum.
Uh-huh.
The DOJ also sued to block UNH's proposed acquisition of Amedisys, a home health provider, citing concerns about competition in local markets.
Oh, what could happen?
Well, an adverse outcome from these investigations could potentially lead to significant fines, restrictions on future M&A activity, or, you know, in a more extreme scenario, forced structural changes to the business. This regulatory overhang, as it's often called, is without a doubt the most significant threat to their long-term strategy. It creates real uncertainty for investors.
Okay, that was a deep dive into the moat itself. Now let's really deconstruct the business model. You've described it as these dual engines. Let's start with UnitedHealthcare, the stable foundation. This is the benefits arm, right? Generates the bulk of the revenue.
That's right. UnitedHealthcare is the benefits arm, provides health insurance coverage, benefit services. It generates the majority of their consolidated revenues, think close to $300 billion in 2024. It's built on three main businesses.
Okay, what are they?
First, employer and individual. This segment provides health plans to large national employers, public sector employers, mid-sized businesses, small businesses, individuals too. Serves nearly 30 million people domestically in its commercial plans. That was actually a robust increase from the prior year, reflecting, you know, good market reception to their plan designs, emphasizing consumer choice, cost transparency.
Okay, employer and individual. Number two.
Second is Medicare and retirement. This is the largest and arguably the most strategically important subsegment within the insurance business. serves that rapidly growing senior population. Medicare Advantage plans, Medicare supplement plans, Part D prescription drug plans.
How many members there?
As of 2024, serving about 7.8 million members in MA plans and over 10 million in Part D plans. Its performance is directly tied to those powerful demographic tailwinds and that ongoing shift to MA plans we discussed.
Makes sense. And the third part of United Healthcare.
And finally, there's community and state. This segment manages state-sponsored Medicaid plans, serves about 7.4 million beneficiaries across 33 states and D.C. as of 2024. Its performance, though, is subject to the cycle of state contract wins and losses, and it was recently impacted by that nationwide Medicaid redetermination process after COVID, which caused some membership ups and downs.
Okay, so how do we gauge the health of that core insurance business? Is there like a key operational metric you look at? Something that tells us how well they're managing costs versus the premiums they bring in?
Yeah, for United Healthcare, the key operational metric is definitely the medical care ratio, or MCR.
MCR, got it.
Think of it simply as the percentage of every premium dollar they collect that actually goes out the door to pay for patient care. It's a crucial measure of how well they're managing medical costs.
And what was it recently?
For the full year 2024, the MCR was around 85.5%. That was actually up from 83.2% the year before.
Why the increase? Higher costs.
Mostly driven by revenue effects, actually. Mm-hmm. Things like government funding reductions in Medicare Advantage, shifts in member mix, the timing of those Medicaid changes we mentioned. But it's worth saying again how Optum helps manage this ratio.
Right. The integration helps the insurance side, too.
Exactly. Through payment integrity programs, steering care to lower cost settings, managing chronic conditions more effectively, this is where that integration really pays off financially for the insurance arm.
Okay, now let's shift gears to Optum, the high growth engine you've been describing. The health services platform seems like this is the primary engine for UNH's innovation, future growth. Faster growing, higher margin than the insurance side, you said.
Exactly. Optum is really the key to the future growth story. For 2023, it reported total revenues over $226 billion, earnings from operations of nearly $16 billion. It's comprised of three highly synergistic businesses.
All right, break down Optum for us.
Okay, first, Optum Health. This is their direct care delivery business. It's the focal point of their whole value-based care strategy. Provides care through a network of clinics, surgery centers, in-home services. Revenue here hit $95.3 billion in 2023. That was a remarkable 33.9% increase year over year.
Wow, huge growth.
Huge growth, driven by expanding their physician network and significant growth in the number of patients served under those value-based risk-bearing contracts. As of early 2025, Optum Health was serving around 4.7 million patients in those fully accountable arrangements.
Okay, Optum Health is care delivery. What's next?
Second, we have Optum Insight. This is their high-margin data analytics technology and services business. It provides software, consulting services to hospitals, health plans, other players in the system, helps them manage revenue cycles, improve clinical performance, modernize operations.
And the financials there?
Revenues were about $18.9 billion in 2023, up almost 30% year over year. But here's something crucial for you to understand about Optum Insight's future. It's revenue backlog.
Backlog, meaning future business already booked.
Exactly. At the end of 2024, that backlog stood at a substantial $32.8 billion. That provides significant revenue visibility for years to come. It's a very strong indicator of future earnings potential from this high-margin segment.
Okay, Insight is tech and analytics. What's the third piece of Optum?
And finally, there's OptumRx. That's the company's pharmacy benefit manager, the PBM. Manages pharmacy benefits for commercial plans, government plans, including United Healthcare itself. Revenue was over $116 billion in 2023, up over 16%. It's one of the three largest PBMs in the U.S., roughly 22% market share, managing billions of prescriptions annually.
So, United Healthcare and Optum, these two engines seem critically dependent on each other, right? How do they actually work together for the whole company, and what's the impact on the overall profitability?
You're hitting on a core point there. The strategic synergy between these segments, that is the core tenet of the entire UNH model. United Healthcare is, in fact, Optum's largest and most important client.
Yeah.
It provides the immense scale, the proprietary data, that fuels Optum's growth engine. In turn, Optum's sophisticated capabilities are explicitly deployed to enhance United Healthcare's competitive position, better cost management, superior service delivery. This tight integration creates a business model that's fundamentally different from its less integrated peers.
And the impact on margins. You said Optum is higher margin.
Yes. And crucially, the faster growth of the higher margin Optum segments, particularly that technology-focused Optum Insight, is structurally accretive to UNH's consolidated operating margin over the long term.
Meaning it pulls the average margin up over time?
Exactly. To put numbers on it, UnitedHealthcare's operating margin was around 5.2% in 2024. Optum's overall was higher, about 6.6%. But within Optum, the long-term target margin for Optum Insight is way higher, maybe 18-22%. That's substantially higher than Optum Health's target of 8-10% or Optumar's 3-5%.
Ah, I see. So Insight really juices the profitability.
It does. And since Optum's overall revenue growth, about 12% in 2024, continues to outpace UnitedHealthcare's growth, around 6%, Optum naturally becomes a larger part of the overall business mix over time.
Mm-hmm.
This dynamic provides a powerful long-term tailwind to consolidated profitability and earnings growth. It happens almost automatically as Optum grows faster, improving the overall profit picture for the company, somewhat independent of just insurance membership trends. It's a fundamental driver for their future.
Okay, it's clear how the segments fit together. Looking at the big picture now, United Health Group really does have an impressive track record. Consistent growth, consistent profitability.
Absolutely. UNH has demonstrated a truly durable and, frankly, impressive track record. Both top-line revenue growth and bottom-line profitability. For the full year 2024, consolidated revenues grew about 8% year-over-year, hitting over $400
billion. $400 billion. Just massive.
Massive. Earnings from operations were over $32 billion. Mm. And if you look longer term, the company has consistently delivered double-digit revenue growth over the past decade. They went from around $130 billion in 2014 to that $400 billion plus in 2024.
And profitability.
Profitability metrics really underscore the quality here. The company has consistently generated a return on equity, ROE, that's a measure of profit generated for each dollar of shareholder equity well in excess of 20%. They reported 23.7% in late 2024.
And how does that compare to others?
That level of profitability is superior to its peers. It truly reflects the company's efficient capital structure.
Yeah.
And increasingly, that higher margin contribution from the Optum segment we just talked about.
Growth is great. Profits are great. But what about cash? How strong is their cash flow? That's often the real sign of a company's underlying health, isn't it?
That's a crucial question. Because cash flow really is the lifeblood. And a hallmark of UNH's financial strength is its prodigious, really large and predictable cash flow generation.
Okay.
For the full year 2024, cash flows from operations reached $24.2 billion. This represents a really strong cash conversion ratio, about 1.6 times net income. That highlights the consistently high quality of the company's earnings. It's not just accounting profit, it's real cash coming in the door.
And what does that cash allow them to do?
Well, this robust free cash flow, it's a core strategic asset. It provides the capital they need to fund those large acquisitions we talked about, invest heavily in technology and innovation, and consistently return capital to shareholders through dividends and share buybacks. And they do all this without ever really over-leveraging their balance sheet. This should definitely resonate with you as a listener interested in financial health and stability.
And underpinning all of this, you mentioned the balance sheet itself.
Yes, the balance sheet fortitude. UNH maintains a disciplined approach to its capital structure. They ensure it's strong and flexible. As of the end of 2024, their debt-to-equity ratio was a very manageable 0.85.
Seems reasonable for a company this size.
Very reasonable. Management has a stated goal of optimizing the capital structure to improve shareholder returns while always ensuring the financial strength of its regulated insurance subsidiaries. They have requirements there.
Right.
And this financial strength, it provides a significant competitive advantage. It allows them to pursue those large-scale M&A deals, and it helps them withstand periods of economic stress or regulatory pressure much more effectively than competitors who might be less capitalized.
Okay, so with all that cash coming in and a strong balance sheet, how does United Health Group actually deploy its capital? What's their strategy for creating long-term value? It sounds like a key part of their story.
It absolutely is. United Health Group's capital allocation strategy is really a cornerstone of its long-term value creation model. Management follows a clear, disciplined framework. It carefully balances reinvestment for organic growth.
Putting money back into the business.
Right. Strategic acquisitions to enhance capabilities.
Buying other companies?
Yes.
Yeah.
And substantial, consistent returns of capital back to shareholders.
Dividends and buybacks.
Exactly. The company's long-term earnings per share, or EPS, growth target, which is ambitious, 13% to 16% per year, is based on this balanced approach. They expect capital deployment activities, the M&A and buybacks, to contribute, on average, maybe 3 to 5 percentage points to that annual growth rate.
Okay, let's talk about returning capital. It sounds like they've been pretty good to shareholders, especially with dividends.
They have been very consistent. The company has a well-established policy of paying a quarterly dividend, and they've increased it for 16 consecutive years now.
16 years of increases, that's solid.
It is. In June 2024, the board approved an 11.7% increase, bringing the quarterly dividend to $2.10 per share. What's particularly important here, though, is that their dividend payout ratio, the percentage of earnings paid out as dividends, has been historically conservative. It averages around 30%.
So they're not stretching to pay it?
Not at all. That low payout ratio provides a significant cushion for dividend safety, and it leaves ample capacity for future growth. It really signals management's confidence in the sustainability of their earnings and cash flow.
Okay, dividends are one piece. What about share buybacks?
Share repurchases are also a major component of their capital return strategy. In 2024 alone, the company repurchased 17 million shares for a total cost of $8.9 billion.
Wow. Nearly $9 billion in buybacks in 1 year.
Yeah. And the board shows its ongoing commitment. They authorized the repurchase of an additional 35 million shares in June 2024. These buybacks, they serve a dual purpose. One, they enhance shareholder returns by reducing the total number of shares outstanding, so each remaining share owns a slightly bigger piece of the company. Two, they help offset the dilutive effect of employee stock-based compensation.
Right, when they issue stock to employees.
Exactly. But crucially, given that persistent threat of regulatory pressure on organic earnings growth, especially from potential changes to Medicare Advantage payments, the company's massive and consistent share repurchase program serves as a critical and flexible lever.
How so?
It allows management to support that ambitious 13% to 16% long-term EPS growth target, even in periods where organic growth might be challenged by regulations. It becomes a key tool for managing earnings expectations and delivering shareholder value.
Okay, so returning capital is big. But beyond that, strategic mergers and acquisitions, M&A, seems like a core pillar of their growth, too. It feels like they're constantly looking to buy things, bring more of the healthcare value chain under their roof.
They absolutely are. M&A is a core pillar. It's primarily used to expand their capabilities, enter new markets, and enhance the integration of that business model we keep coming back to.
And the focus is usually Optum.
The strategic focus of their acquisition activity has been consistently centered on building out that Optum Health Services platform, explicitly designed to feed the Optum flywheel.
Right.
By acquiring care delivery assets like clinics or physician groups, home health providers, health technology companies. UNH brings more components of the healthcare value chain in-house. This lets them better manage costs and quality for their insured members, which further strengthens the competitive moat of the whole integrated enterprise.
Can you give some recent examples?
Sure. Recent large-scale deals really highlight this. For example, the $5.4 billion acquisition of home health provider LHEC Group, and their proposed $3.3 billion acquisition of Emathesis, another home health provider. These aim to build a dominant position in that increasingly important home-based care setting.
Okay, home health is big. What else?
Likewise, the huge $13 billion acquisition of Change Healthcare, the one hit by the cyber attack later. Change is a leading health technology and payment processing firm. That deal was specifically designed to significantly bolster the data and analytics capabilities of Optum Insight.
Right, feeding that analytics engine.
Precisely. However, it's critical to stress again, while M&A has been a successful growth driver overall, it is not without risk. As the company explicitly notes in its financial filings, integrating large, complex organizations carries significant execution risk.
And Change Healthcare is the prime example.
It's the starkest recent example. That 2024 cyber attack that crippled the newly acquired Change Healthcare for months. It led to widespread disruption across the entire U.S. healthcare payment system, and it resulted in billions of dollars in direct costs and business disruption for UNH itself.
Yeah, a huge headache.
A massive headache. Furthermore, the company's aggressive M&A strategy has attracted that significant antitrust scrutiny from the Department of Justice, which could indeed impede future transactions they want to make. Hashtag Shag N7, future growth vectors and strategic imperatives.
All right, looking ahead then, where does United Health Group see its biggest opportunities for continued growth? What are those future growth vectors beyond just, you know, keeping the current engines running?
Well, the company's future growth is really heavily predicated on deepening its strategic advantages in two key areas, value-based care and technology. while also capitalizing on the structural growth opportunities within its core markets.
Okay, let's start with value-based care. You've mentioned it's a central pillar.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
Deepening the value-based care VBC model. This systemic transition, moving away from fee-for-service paying for volume towards VBC paying for quality and outcomes, is central to UNH's long-term strategy.
And they're leading this shift.
They're at the forefront, largely leveraging their Optum Health platform to take on full financial risk for patient populations. As of early 2025, Optum was serving nearly 5 million people in these fully accountable arrangements.
Taking full risk means if the patient costs more than expected, Optum loses money.
Essentially, yes. They get a set amount per patient per month, and they have to manage all their care within that budget. The strategic imperative here is to expand this model, cover more of their own UnitedHealthcare members and also members of third-party health plans who might contract with Optum.
Why is this model so important for them?
Because VBC aligns the incentives of the payer, like UnitedHealthcare or Optum, and the provider, the doctors, in Optum Health. It creates this powerful focus on preventive care, chronic disease management, keeping patients healthy and out of expensive hospital settings.
Better outcomes, lower costs.
That's the goal. Research indicates that patients in Optum's fully accountable care models do experience better health outcomes at a lower total cost compared to traditional fee-for-service Medicare. Success here, that will be a key driver for future margin expansion and competitive differentiation.
Okay, VBC is huge. What about technology? Are they still investing heavily there? Or is it more about integrating what they've already bought, like Change Healthcare?
Oh, absolutely. Technology and digital transformation remain immense priorities. UNH is making substantial investments, reportedly over $5 billion a year, in technology and innovation, trying to modernize the healthcare system.
$5 billion a year just on tech.
That's the reported figure. Key initiatives are focused on leveraging data and digital tools to improve efficiency, enhance the consumer experience, support clinical decision-making.
Like AI and machine learning.
Exactly. They're deploying hundreds of artificial intelligence and machine learning, AML, programs across the company, used for simplifying administrative stuff like claims processing, detecting fraud and abuse, building data science platforms to help consumers find the right care, providing clinical decision support tools to doctors right where they're seeing patients.
What about telehealth?
Big focus there, too. Significantly expanding telehealth and virtual care offerings, providing members with more convenient, accessible options for medical care, behavioral health services. It can reduce costs, improve access, especially in rural or underserved areas.
And engaging consumers directly.
Yes, through consumer digital engagement platforms, like their Rally Digital Health app. The aim is to engage consumers more directly in managing their own health. These tools provide personalized health info, wellness incentives, transparency tools to help members understand the cost and quality of their care options before they get care.
So even as massive as they are, where else can they realistically find significant expansion opportunities? Are there untapped markets, new demographics they can target?
Yeah, there are still several clear runways for future growth. First, back to Medicare Advantage penetration. Despite MA crossing that 50% threshold nationally, there's still a significant opportunity to convert the remaining, you know, roughly 46% of beneficiaries currently in traditional fee-for-service Medicare.
Still almost half the market left to potentially switch.
Exactly. As this population ages and seeks those extra benefits and cost protections MA plans offer, UNH's market-leading position and brand recognition make it a primary beneficiary of this ongoing shift.
Okay, more MA growth. Where else?
Second, Medicaid complex care. Future growth here is expected to come from states expanding managed care programs to cover more complex, higher-cost populations.
Like who?
People needing long-term services and support, maybe in nursing homes or home care, or individuals with multiple serious chronic conditions. UNH's sophisticated care management capabilities, powered by Optum, give them a key competitive advantage in managing the health of these really challenging, expensive populations.
Got it. What about internationally? Are they looking to expand abroad?
Well, their international strategy currently appears to be a lower strategic priority, frankly. The company recently divested its large Brazilian subsidiary, Amil. That resulted in a huge $7 billion charge.
$7 billion. Ouch.
Yeah. It really suggests a strategic retrenchment, a pulling back, to focus more intensely on the complexities and the still significant opportunities within the core U.S. market. While UnitedHealthcare Global does serve members internationally, significant capital investment in further international expansion doesn't seem to be a primary growth driver right now. Hashtag tag take 8. comprehensive risk assessment.
We've talked a lot about the impressive strengths, the growth opportunities, but we've also definitely hinted at the challenges. This is a complex beast operating in a really complex industry. So for our listener, what are the major unavoidable risks involved with United Health Group? What should they really be keeping a close eye on?
Yeah, it's crucial for you, the listener, to understand that an investment in United Health Group comes with exposure to a complex and significant set of risks. These stem primarily from its position within the highly regulated, politically sensitive U.S. healthcare industry. These risks are laid out in detail in their financial filings, their 10-Ks, but we could broadly categorize them into four main areas.
Okay, what's category one?
Probably regulation.
You guessed it. The most significant and persistent risk category for UNH, and really its peers too, is regulatory and political risks. The company's profitability, its strategic direction, they are heavily influenced by government action.
How so?
Well, first, just changes in healthcare laws. There's constant flux. Future legislative changes to the Affordable Care Act, other foundational healthcare laws, could materially alter their operating environment. Second, government program funding and reimbursement. A huge chunk of UNH's revenue comes from government programs, especially Medicare Advantage.
So reductions in MA reimbursement rates, which has been the recent trend, or adverse changes to that risk adjustment methodology used to calculate payments, those can directly compress their revenues and margins. Also, failing to achieve high CMS star ratings for quality can mean losing significant bonus payments.
Okay, so funding risk. What else under regulatory?
Government investigations and litigation. Given its sheer size, UNH is just a frequent target. The company is currently cooperating with formal criminal and civil inquiries from the Department of Justice regarding its Medicare Advantage business practices.
Criminal inquiries? That sounds serious.
It is serious. Such investigations can result in substantial fines, penalties, forced changes to business practices, and they create a significant valuation overhang on the stock until they're resolved. This is arguably the top concern for many investors right now.
Okay, regulatory is huge. What's the next risk category?
Beyond regulatory, you have competitive and execution risks. First, just intense competition. The managed care industry is fiercely competitive. There's constant pressure on pricing and service from various health plans, both big national ones and smaller regional players.
And the execution part?
That relates mainly to M&A integration risk. The company relies heavily on large acquisitions for growth, right? That introduces significant execution risk. A failure to successfully integrate a major acquisition, think Change Healthcare again, could lead to operational disruptions, an inability to realize the expected synergies or cost savings, and potential impairment of goodwill. That means admitting the acquired asset isn't worth what they paid for it.
Okay. Regulatory competitive execution. What's third?
The third is substantial operational risks. The core risk for any health insurer is the inability to accurately predict and manage medical cost management.
Meaning costs could spike unexpectedly.
Exactly. A sudden spike in utilization, people using more services. The introduction of new, very expensive therapies, higher than expected medical inflation. Any of these could cause medical costs to exceed the premiums they collected, severely impacting profitability.
And the other big operational risk nowadays?
Cybersecurity and data privacy. As a custodian of sensitive health information for over 150 million people, UNH is a prime target for sophisticated cyber attacks. The 2024 ransomware attack on Change Healthcare showed the catastrophic potential.
Right. Massive disruption.
Massive disruption. Billions in direct costs. A future breach could lead to huge regulatory fines, waves of litigation, and severe lasting reputational damage.
Okay, that's a scary one. What's the fourth category?
Finally, while healthcare demand is generally considered non-discretionary, fairly resilient, UNH isn't entirely immune to economic sensitivity.
How could a recession affect them?
Well, a significant economic downturn leading to widespread job losses could reduce enrollment in their profitable employer-sponsored commercial plans. That would hurt revenue and earnings. Similarly, state budget pressures during a recession could lead state governments to cut Medicaid reimbursement rates, impacting that segment. So, while typically stable, they still feel broader economic shifts.
Okay, given all this complexity, the dual engines, the vast market, all those risks you just talked about, how do you even begin to value a company like United Health Group? It's clearly way more than just a typical insurance company. A standard approach probably doesn't capture the full picture, right?
You're absolutely right. Assessing the intrinsic value of UnitedHealth Group really requires a multifaceted approach, one that explicitly acknowledges its unique structure. Just comparing it to pure-play managed care peers, it's simply insufficient. It fails to capture the distinct value and, frankly, the impressive growth profile of that Optum segment.
So what approach should we use?
Well, a comprehensive valuation framework for UNH should really incorporate several methods. Relative valuation, comparing its multiples to peers. A sum of the parts analysis valuing each piece separately, and also considering the inputs for a discounted cash flow model.
Okay, let's start with relative valuation. How does UNH typically trade compared to its peers?
Historically, the market has consistently awarded UNH a premium valuation multiple compared to those pure play managed care peers.
Why the premium?
It's a direct reflection of several things. It's a more diversified business model, it's higher long-term growth prospects, significantly driven by Optum, and it's consistently superior returns on capital.
And where does it trade now?
As of mid-2025, UNH trades at a normalized price-to-earnings, or PE, ratio around 10.5x. That's notably above peers like Elevance Health at maybe 9.0x, or Centene way down at 3.8x.
Okay, so there's definitely a premium.
There is. And the key question for you as an investor looking at this is whether that growth and quality differential truly justifies this prevailing premium, especially when you factor in those heightened regulatory risks we keep discussing. Is the premium warranted, or is it too much given the risks?
Right. Okay, so relative valuation shows a premium. What about valuing the two distinct parts, the insurance and the services, separately? That sounds like a sum of the parts analysis. Seems like it would be complex here.
It is complex, but you're right. Given the distinct characteristics of UnitedHealthcare and Optum, a sum of the parts, or SOTP, analysis is arguably the most appropriate method for valuing UNH.
How does SOTP work?
Basically, you value each major segment separately, using appropriate methods or multiples for each. Then you sum up those individual values to arrive at an enterprise value for the whole company, after adjusting for things like corporate overhead costs and net debt. It helps you peel back the layers and see what each component might be worth on its own.
Okay, how would you value UnitedHealthcare in an SOTP?
For valuing UnitedHealthcare, the insurance segment, you typically apply a peer group multiple to its earnings from operations. A reasonable approach is to use the average PE, or maybe a bit the multiple, of the more traditional managed care organizations. They represent comparable core insurance businesses.
Makes sense. Now, the trickier part, valuing Optum.
Exactly. Valuing Optum is significantly more complex, and it's really key to the whole SOTP exercise. It requires a blended multiple approach because Optum itself has those three distinct subsegments.
Right. Optum Rx, Optum Health, Optum Insight.
Precisely. So for Optum Rx, the PBM, you might value it based on multiples of PBM-centric companies like Cigna's Evernorth, or maybe other PBMs if they were standalone. For Optum Health, the care delivery arm, you'd look at multiples of publicly traded physician groups or outpatient care providers. Mm. Given its growth profile and direct care model, this segment would likely command a higher multiple than the traditional insurance business.
And Optum Insight, the tech piece.
And then Optum Insight, the health technology segment. This one warrants the highest multiple of the three. As a high-margin, technology- and data-driven business with that significant recurring revenue backlog we talked about, it's comparable to leading health IT and data analytics firms, which typically trade at much higher valuations in the market. This is often the segment whose value might surprise people when you break it out.
So what's the ultimate goal of doing this complex SOTP?
The SOTP framework is crucial because it helps determine if the market is currently applying a conglomerate discount to UNH, meaning valuing the whole less than the sum of its parts because it's complex. Or, alternatively, if the market fully appreciates the synergistic value and the powerful growth potential embedded within that integrated Optum platform. It's a way to see if the whole is truly valued appropriately given its very potent parts.
Okay, SOTP makes sense for this structure. You also mentioned discounted cash flow, or DCF.
Yeah, briefly. We won't build a full DCF model here, but the key inputs for such a model would absolutely need to reflect that dual-engine nature of the business.
What kind of inputs?
Well, for growth assumptions, you'd likely use a two-stage model. Higher growth rates for Optum, maybe low double digits, than for UnitedHealthcare. Perhaps mid to high single digits, consistent with management's long-term guidance. For margin assumptions, you'd need segment-level forecasts. Optum's consolidated margin expected to be higher than UnitedHealthcare's, with specific margin expansion potential driven by the growth of high-margin Optum Insight.
What about that discount rate?
For the discount rate, the weighted average cost of capital calculation should probably consider that the risk profile, and therefore the cost of capital, for high-growth, tech-oriented Optum might be different from that of the more stable, utility-like United Healthcare insurance business. Maybe use different discount rates for each segment's cash flows in a more complex model.
And the terminal value. End of the forecast.
And for the terminal value, the terminal growth rate would likely be pegged to long-term nominal GDP growth, reflecting the mature nature of the overall U.S. healthcare market that UNH operates in. #X, management quality and strategic vision.
Okay, so we've broken down the business, the moat, the risks, the valuation frameworks. But who's actually running this colossus? What can you tell us about the people at the helm? What's the leadership assessment look like?
Yeah, the quality and the strategic direction set by United Health Group's leadership team are absolutely critical components of the whole investment thesis, especially given the company's sheer complexity and the incredibly dynamic nature of the healthcare industry. The executive team. It's comprised of seasoned industry veterans, people with deep experience across healthcare, pharmaceuticals, finance.
Who's the CEO?
At the top, Andrew Witty is the chief executive officer. He was appointed CEO back in February 2021. Mr. Witty brought extensive global healthcare experience. He was previously CEO of the pharmaceutical giant GlaxoSmithKline.
Okay, big pharma background.
Right. But crucially, he first joined UNH as CEO of Optum back in 2018 and later became president of the parent company. So that gave him intimate knowledge of the services business, which is so core to the company's whole strategy.
Ah, so he knew Optum inside out before taking the top job.
Exactly. His leadership has really been defined by a continued focus on advancing that integrated care model and also navigating a pretty challenging regulatory and public relations environment, including, you know, testifying before Congress after that Change Healthcare cyber attack.
Who else is key? The CFO.
Yes. John Rex is the president and chief financial officer. Mr. Rex has a deep tenured history with the company. He was appointed president and CFO in 2024 after serving as just CFO since 2016. Like Mr. Witty, he also has a strong background in the services side. He was previously the CFO of Optum.
Interesting. Both came up through Optum.
It shows the strategic importance of Optum. And Rex's prior experience before UNH was as a senior research analyst covering the healthcare sector for investment banks. That gives him a valuable external perspective on investor expectations, capital markets. He really understands how Wall Street views the company.
What about the leaders running the actual segments, United Healthcare and Optum?
Yeah, it's worth noting the segment leadership. The company has experienced some recent transitions in key roles, notably following the tragic death of the United Healthcare CEO, Brian Thompson, in late 2024.
Oh, right. I remember that.
Yeah, very sad. The company moved quickly, appointed Timothy Knoll. He's a long-tenured executive who previously led the big Medicare and retirement business to head the entire insurance division. And Heather Shinfrocco, another veteran leader with experience across multiple segments, was promoted to CEO of Optum.
So a relatively new team leading the core division.
Relatively new in those specific top spots, yes. So for you, the listener, it will definitely be important to monitor the ability of this new team to maintain operational excellence and really execute on the long-term strategy. They have some very big shoes to fill.
Okay, so given that leadership team, what's their overall strategic vision and what's their track record of actually executing it? Has it been consistent?
Well, management has articulated a clear, consistent, and I think compelling long-term strategic vision. It's centered on building a, quote, more modern, high-performing health system.
Okay, how do they plan to do that?
This vision gets operationalized through five strategic growth priorities they talk about. Value-based care, health benefits, health technology, health financial services, and pharmacy services. And as we've discussed all through this deep dive, the absolute core of this strategy is that powerful, virtuous cycle between United Healthcare and Optum.
Right, the flywheel.
The flywheel. The company's track record of executing against this vision is generally strong. Evidenced by their consistent achievement of financial targets, their leadership position in that critical shift to value-based care, their history of mostly successfully integrating acquisitions, despite, you know, some notable challenges like Change Healthcare, they've shown a strong ability to adapt and push forward.
And what about their discipline around capital allocation? Does that tie into the vision?
Absolutely. Finally, on capital allocation discipline, as we detailed earlier, the management team and the board have demonstrated a highly disciplined and, frankly, shareholder-friendly approach.
Mm-hmm.
They have consistently balanced the need for internal reinvestment and strategic M&A with a firm commitment to returning a significant portion of that robust free cash flow back to shareholders. via a consistently growing dividend and those substantial share repurchases.
And that supports the growth target.
Exactly. This balanced approach is a key driver of the company's targeted 13% to 16% long-term EPS growth rate. And it reflects a management team that seems closely aligned with shareholder interests. They appear to be playing the long game effectively. Hashtag TechXI, conclusion, and key monitorables.
Wow, we have covered a tremendous amount of ground in this deep dive on United Health Group. Let's try to bring it all together now. For our listener, what should they take away as the concise synthesis, the core story of UNH?
Okay, let's try to break it down by answering those core research questions we sort of set out with from the analysis.
Sounds good. First up, how sustainable is that competitive moat in this constantly changing healthcare world?
Okay, the company's moat, rooted in that reinforcing Optum flywheel and the immense scale of United Healthcare, it looks exceptionally sustainable. And in fact, it appears to be widening. The compounding nature of its data advantage, the sheer scale required to even try to replicate its integrated model, these create formidable barriers to entry.
So competitors aren't the main threat.
Well, while competitors are certainly trying to emulate the strategy, UNH possesses a significant first-mover advantage and just superior scale right now. Critically, the primary threat to this moat isn't really traditional competition. It's potential regulatory action that could seek to limit its scale or scope.
Okay, moat looks strong but faces regulatory risk. Second question, what about the valuation multiple? Is the premium justified?
Right, a premium valuation multiple relative to pure-play managed care peers. We think it is fundamentally justified. This premium is warranted by UNH's more diversified, more resilient business model, its superior long-term growth profile driven significantly by Optum, and its consistently higher returns on capital. However,
always a however.
Always. The magnitude of this premium will likely fluctuate. It'll depend on the market's perception of those prevailing regulatory and political risks facing the company and the broader industry at any given time.
Got it. Third question. How should investors weigh the growth potential of Optum against the stability of the insurance side? Is it a trade-off?
You, the listener, should really view the two segments as deeply symbiotic, not as a simple trade-off. United Healthcare provides the stable, cash-generative foundation. It provides the massive membership base, the proprietary data stream that's the essential fuel for Optum's growth engine.
And Optum.
Optum, in turn, provides the higher growth, higher margin services that drive the enterprise's overall growth rate and margin profile. And its capabilities simultaneously strengthen United Healthcare's competitive position. Optum is the primary driver of future growth, but its success is inextricably linked to the health and scale of the insurance business. They are truly two sides of the same powerful coin.
Okay, not a trade-off, but symbiotic. Fourth, what are the key catalysts that could drive the stock's valuation multiple up or down?
Okay. Potential catalyst for multiple expansion, a higher valuation could include a favorable resolution to those ongoing DOJ investigations, maybe a more benign or predictable Medicare Advantage reimbursement rate environment than feared, faster than expected growth and margin expansion in the Optum segments, especially Optum Insight, or maybe a major strategic acquisition that the market really likes.
And catalyst for the multiple going down, contraction.
Conversely, potential catalysts for multiple contraction, a lower valuation could include an adverse outcome from the DOJ investigations, like big fines or business restrictions, more aggressive than expected cuts to MA payment rates, a sustained spike in medical cost trends that really pressures margins, or another major operational failure or M&A integration misstep, similar to the Change Healthcare cyber attack.
Okay, catalyst clear. Finally, how does UNH's capital allocation strategy actually create long-term shareholder value?
The strategy creates value through that disciplined, multi-pronged approach that compounds shareholder returns over time. Robust free cash flow gets judiciously deployed to fund organic growth and innovation, driving operating earnings, execute strategic, capability-enhancing acquisitions that strengthen the moat, pay that consistently growing dividend, providing a direct cash return, and repurchase a significant amount of stock annually, reducing the share count and providing that powerful, flexible lever to support the company's long-term EPS growth target.
That's an incredibly comprehensive synthesis. Thank you. So for our listener, if they want to keep a close eye on United Health Group moving forward, what are the absolute must-watch metrics, the key performance indicators, the KPIs that are essential for validating this whole thesis over time?
Right. To effectively track UNH's performance and validate this thesis, you should focus on these key metrics, which you can find in their quarterly and annual financial reports. First, under insurance cost control, watch the medical care ratio, MCR. by segment. This directly measures their underwriting discipline, their ability to manage medical costs across commercial, Medicare, Medicaid. It's their core profitability metric on the insurance side.
MCR by segment.
Got it. Second, for insurance growth. Monitor medical membership growth by segment. Tracks market share gains or losses. Are they attracting new members? Especially in MA and commercial.
Membership growth. Okay.
Third, for services growth. Pay close attention to Optum revenue growth by segment. This shows the growth trajectory of those key long-term value drivers. Optum Health, Optum Insight, Optum Rx. You really want to see strong, consistent growth here.
Optum revenue growth. Makes sense.
Fourth, for services profitability. Look at Optum operating margins by segment. Especially focus on that high-margin Optum Insight segment. Is that profitable engine continuing to expand its margins?
Optum margins. Check.
Fifth, for strategic execution. Track the number of patients in value-based care. This is a primary metric for gauging progress on their core strategic shift. Are they moving more patients into those outcome-focused, risk-based models?
Patients in VBC. Good one.
Sixth, for shareholder value. Monitor free cash flow per share growth. Measures their ability to generate cash for shareholders on a per share basis, reflecting both operations and those buybacks. It's really what drives direct returns.
Free cash flow per share. Got it.
And finally, for capital efficiency, review their return on invested capital, ROIC. This is a key measure of management's effectiveness in allocating capital, all that cash flow and debt, to generate profitable growth across the entire enterprise. Tells you if their investments are actually paying off well.
Perfect. MCR, membership, Optum revenue, Optum margin, VBC patients, FCF per share, and ROIC. That's a great list to track.
Those should give you an really good handle on how the core thesis is playing out.
Well, you've now seen how United Health Group operates as this incredible dual engine, really attempting to transform healthcare from within. But here's something to consider as we wrap up. As a company aims to integrate more and more parts of the healthcare value chain, becoming both the insurer and a major provider of care, does this ultimately foster greater efficiency and better patient outcomes? Or does it concentrate just too much power, too much risk for one single entity to manage effectively?
Yeah, and that raises an even broader important question, doesn't it? In a world that's seeking both innovation and equitable access to care, how will this delicate balance between immense private scale like UNH and necessary public oversight continue to shape the very definition, the very future of healthcare in America? It's a fundamental tension.
Indeed it is. A lot to think about there. We certainly hope this deep dive has given you a profound understanding of United Health Group, its strengths, its complexities, its future path. We encourage you to delve deeper into any specific areas that might have piqued your interest, whether it's the intricacies of Medicare Advantage, the incredible power of data analytics in healthcare, or those ongoing debates surrounding vertical integration and market power. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.